Muir goes into the motor car and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
A woman got a new car, you see, and 3 days later she went back to the garage where she'd bought it. She said, excuse me, do I understand that the guarantee covers anything that breaks? The dealer said, that's quite right, yes, yes. She said, in that case, she said, I'd like a bicycle, a garden fence, 2 gate posts, a garage door, my husband's left leg. Chap drove his car into a garage. He said, excuse me. The mechanical voice says, yes, sir. He said, look, he said, I wonder if my right indicator's working. Could you test it? He says, right-ho, sir. I'll stand out here, you switch it on, and I'll see if your right indicator's working. He said, switched on, fellas, is right. He said, no, not working. No. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. A foggy night in the West End of London. There's a motorist coming out of the theatre. Pea Super can't see a hand in front of his face. And he thinks, well, I'll never get home. I'd better follow that car in front going out of the car park. So he positions himself behind this guy's car and follows the red taillights. For about 6 miles, everything goes well. Then suddenly, the car in front stops abruptly. The lights go off and this fellow goes right in the back of him. Crash! Because he says, that was bloody stupid, wasn't it? Stopping suddenly like that and putting your lights out. What's the idea? He says, wait a minute, I'm in my garage, aren't I? It's Monday morning at the local magistrate's court. Two of the JPs turn up for duty and one says, I say, do you realise that both of us are up this morning for speeding, both you and I? And the other JP said, well, I'll try you, you try me. That'll do. He said, fine. The first JP got on the bench, the other one got in the dock. He said, now, what are you charged with? He said, charged with the excessive speed limit. Built up area, 40 miles an hour. The man said, right here, well, I'll let you off the caution this time. Don't let it happen again. They said, thank you, and they changed places. And one, the other magistrate got in the box, the other one got on the bench. Now they want the charge. He said, exceeding the speed limit, sir, 40 miles an hour, built up area. He said, yes. Well, I'm going to fine you £100 and endorsement. I said, well, he said, there's a fine. He said, when I tried you, he said, it was nothing, you know, a caution. He said, oh, yes, there was far too much of this going on. Second case this morning.
The invention of the motor car is said to have had a momentous effect on the lives of ordinary people. For the first time, everyone could go where they pleased, how they pleased. This is going back a few years, of course. The motor car was the key to independence. That, at least, was a theory. But not everyone agreed. John Keatus, for example.
The automobile did not put the adventure of travel within reach of the common man. Instead, it first gave him the opportunity to make himself more and more common.
Others, like a Mr. J.E. Morpurgo, welcomed the invention.
God would not have invented the automobile if he'd intended me to walk.
This respect for cars converge on idolatry. The world seems to be divided into those who worship the machines and those who hate them. Holden Caulfield, the hero of J.D. Salinger's The Catcher in the Rye, fell into the latter category.
Now take most people, they're crazy about cars, and if they get a brand new car, already they start thinking about trading it in for one that's even newer. I don't even like old cars. I mean, they don't even interest me. I'd rather have a goddamn horse. A horse is at least human, for God's sake.
But whatever you think of cars, it's difficult to avoid at least a sneaky respect for the technology which developed them. As with most major innovations, the motor car brought together many existing inventions. Some of them went back as far into history as the wheel.
Actually, nobody really knows who was the first person to invent the wheel. It's all shrouded in mystery. Apparently, in primeval times, there were these two primitive people who were both working on inventions in their caves. They were called Drodbar and Gorbli, two extremely primitive people. Then one day, Drodbar came out with a great smile all over his hairy face and he said, guess what? I've just invented the Bandan Bladderstiddle. It's absolutely brilliant, brilliant. And so Gorbli came out and said, hello, Drodbar. I hear you've invented the Bandan Bladderstiddle. Congratulations. What exactly is it? And Drodbar said, it's a wonderful device that will revolutionise the world. It's very simple. It's just a round thing that's easy to push along, that's all. And then Gorbally went white and said in a strangled voice, "It hasn't by any chance got spokes in it, has it?" "Yes, it has, as a matter of fact," said Drodby. "How the devil did you know?" And Gorbally said, "That's not a bandam bladderstiddle, you stupid idiot. That's a wheel." "It's a wheel, and I invented it first. How dare you steal my idea?" And a great fight blowed out between them. And if the man who invented fire hadn't come along and threatened to set light to them both, they might have killed each other. Anyway, there was a great dispute, and all the hairy old Neanderthals met together at Stonehenge, a lovely place, to decide who really thought of it first. And eventually, after days and days of argument, they come to the conclusion that although it seemed likely that Drodbar had thought of his bandan bladderstiddle before Gorbally had thought of his wheel, nevertheless, they were going to give the credit to Gorbally because he thought of a much better name for it. I think they're right, actually. I mean, think of going into a garage and asking them to put a bit more air into your bandan bladderstiddle.
E.L. Wistie, as told to Peter Cook. From those early beginnings, automobile technology has come a long way. Every day there's some new improvement available for your car. New speedometer, an air-cooled gasket leakage condensation inhibitor, electric butter knife that runs off the battery. For some people, all this electronic sophistication takes the fun away. Here are the views of W.D.H. McCulloch and Fugas.
Since the early days of motoring, there have been many changes in the apparatus designed to keep drivers posted as to any sensational developments under the bonnet. In the first cars, there was little or none of this form of affectation. Steam coming out of a radiator or elsewhere indicated that the water was boiling, and a radiator that slowly became incandescent showed that it had finished doing so. This was all there was to go on. In those days, motorists were motorists.
But the pioneering spirit still persists. There are still the enthusiasts whose only criterion of worth in a car is age, and whose idea of bliss is weekends spent spread-eagled under direct oil drips, restoring ancient scrap iron to its original glory. But that is not the only snobbery in the automobile world. Here's another observation from John Keatus.
In the beginning, a car was a status symbol, like a boar's tusk in a Papuan's nose.
The theory is, the more expensive the car, the greater the status of its owner. A report from The Guardian.
Mr. Wilfred Dutton, aged 32 of St. Helens, finds that the acquisition of a 1963 Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud has considerably improved his business, scrap metal. He tours the district in it in search of scrap and no longer finds difficulty in seeing factory directors because he wears overalls. Now I merely drive up to the main entrance and whatever I'm wearing, the directors usually come out to see me.
Traditionally, advertisers would have us believe, ownership of a Rolls-Royce is the ultimate accolade for a special type of person. A review from an AA Motorist magazine.
The boot isn't very big, but a man from the factory warned me about that. He told me a Rolls-Royce owner's luggage, sir, should precede him by rail or air.
The ultimate, perhaps, in vehicle snobbery. Here's a review from the Daily Worker.
There are separate air conditioning units for the front and rear compartments. The chauffeur will not have to breathe the same air as the passengers.
Good old Daily Worker. Most would-be car owners start more humbly. It's possible to pick up remarkable bargains by scanning the small ad columns of the newspapers. Here's one from the Evening Standard.
Ford Prefect, 1939, faultless condition, new engine 10,000 miles ago, available immediately, taxed, nearest £300, including six new laid eggs for William Byer.
And here's another from the Cambridge Daily News.
1959 Austin A35, black, heater, new tyres, immaculate, elderly owner exchanged for bath chair.
If the newspapers don't come up with your dream vehicle, then perhaps you should go along to a second-hand car salesman and see what's on offer. You're guaranteed personal and reliable service.
Morning, gents. What can I do for you?
Mr. Hancock wants to buy a car.
Oh, you couldn't have come to a better place. I've got a wonderful selection here. What sort do you want?
Oh, something I'd look my best in.
Oh, that's a pity. I sold the last hearse this morning. Well, I should be able to find something for you. Let's have a look round. Ah, what about this one? Just rolled off the assembly line. Who pushed it?
My name.
There's nothing wrong with this car. Solid as a rock. Built like a tank. Just test the strength of that metal. Go on, tap it. Go on.
All right, all right. Yes, it you can't say that. Got anything else?
Well, let's see now. Oh, here's one. Just a car you're looking for. Lovely model. One of the finest cars in the yard.
It's a bit old, isn't it?
Old? It's in beautiful nick. Look at the workmanship. Look at those headlights.
Yes, they're lovely. Can you still get the wicks for them?
Well, anyway, it hasn't been used much. Still got the original tires.
Yes, those solid ones do last, don't they?
I'll start her up and take you for a ride in her. You'll be amazed at the performance.
What's its fuel consumption?
Well, let's see now. On a long run, I should say, about 10 miles to the gallon of water. And 100 weight of coke.
Thanks, I don't think we'll bother.
Well, wait till you get in and see it go.
Ah.
You'll be intoxicated by the exuberance of your velocity.
Get away.
I'll just get her going. Got a match?
Here you are.
Right, you work the bellows. Hancock, take this brush and give the chimney a clean out. Ah, you're getting a bit of steam up now. We go for a ride round the block.
Bags, I take the tiller.
Right. Let it go.
Aren't you coming in with us, Mr. James?
No, I better walk in front with a red flag. Well, come on, get moving.
He won't move.
Have you got the brakes off?
Yes, I've been off for years.
No brakes, well, how do you pull up?
Stick your hand out, grab hold of a lamppost.
It still won't move. There must be something wrong.
All right, put the fire out. We'll have a look at it. Billy, crawl underneath.
Okay. I found the trouble.
What is it?
Well, you know the centrifugal transmission joins the throttle and the intake manifold through the ignition distributor.
Yeah.
And you know the transmission meets the differential just behind the universal couplings under the half shaft.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to look around the yard. They're not here.
Tony Hancock, Sid James, Bill Kerr, and Moira Lister. Now, right from the start, cars had sexual overtones. First, there was the status thing, based on the enduring myth that possessions make people sexy. But there was more to it than that. Bergen Evans.
While the car may limit the size of the family, it is certainly instrumental in getting one started. There is no more irresistible mating call than the imperious horn at the curb.
Cars also encourage proximity. A man and a woman alone in a tin box, which can be placed anywhere at will, is a potentially explosive sexual setup. There are one or two physical hazards to be overcome, things like gear levers. But these do not deter the avid automobile amorist. The trouble is that car drivers have been known to assume a sort of droit de seigneur with their passengers. Here's a letter published in Woman's Own.
My friend takes me several rides a week in his employer's car when he has to go into the local town. It worries me because I know he expects a kiss. I don't mind that, really, but I do feel that as it isn't his car, it's not necessary to kiss him.
There's marvellous morality there. What happens if he's got it on the hire purchase? Frequently, encounters in cars get even more heated and end up in the courts. Some people will believe anything, according to this legal report from the Daily Mirror.
Miss Smith alleged that Jones tried to seduce her in his car, saying that it would make her a better footballer.
That's a new one, isn't it? Another from, inevitably, the News of the World.
Asked by the judge why she took off her petticoat in the accused's car on the Saturday, she explained, "It was rather an expensive one, and I knew what he was going to do, but I was so frightened I couldn't stop him. I asked him if I could take it off, as I did not want to get it crumpled."
Cars are not sexy only because of what happens inside them. The machines themselves seem to have a sexual identity, a feminine one at that. A letter from the Evening Standard.
I had driven her about 163,000 miles with only two real breakdowns, and she was carefully maintained in my own garage. But she's objected violently to her new owner and has had trouble ever since he took her over. I've always thought that cars have some kind of mechanical soul, but this makes me believe it more than ever.
That sort of mechanical love affair can become even more passionate.
Yes. Lovely curves, like the shape.
I'm a nice car.
Yes. How many cylinders have you got?
Two.
Good, and you're only 18 horsepower.
No, please, please.
What's wrong?
Well, it's been so nice. Don't spoil everything.
Women.
I'm sorry. I can't help it.
Here, have a can of oil.
You just want to get me tanked up, don't you? And then before I know where I am, you'll be obtaining the power for automatic clutch operation by making use of the partial vacuum in the engine inlet manifold.
Just want to take you for a drive.
I'm sorry, but a girl's got so much to lose. She's never the same once she's been decarbonized.
Well, I'm off then.
Oh, no, don't go. Just a little ride then, but not fast. Be gentle with me. I haven't got shock absorbers.
Change gear. Horn.
Oh, I like that.
Now we're going to do an S curve.
Oh, do it again.
We'll be in the hedge. Let's double the clutch, Mildred.
No, please. Be patient with me. I may later.
That's right. Keep yourself in a state of independent front wheel suspension, and the disadvantage of which is the heavy beam axle is inconsistent with good road holding.
I love the way you said that.
You did? You know, you wouldn't look too bad if you used a bit more antifreeze.
Do another double bend.
It's kinky.
It's not. I like other things.
Such as?
I don't like to say it.
Go on.
Well, I like it when you move the gear lever and close the switch, thus energizing the solenoid and causing the left-hand side of the piston to be exposed to the partial vacuum in the reservoir.
You've been driven by other men.
Well, you've driven other women.
It's not the same thing.
Oh, why are you stopping? I'm not going in a lay-by with a strange man.
I'm not stopping.
Well, what are you doing then?
Reversing.
Pervert!
Bit of trendy smut from David Frost and Jean Hart. One interesting byproduct of the invention of the motor car has been to put an enormous number of generally law-abiding citizens into conflict with the law. Most motorists who appear in court resent it very much and try to capitalize on their position as much as possible. News from the Evening Standard.
A man whose car crashed into a telegraph pole agreed at Epsom County Court today that he should pay the expense incurred by the post office for installing a new post, but claimed that he was entitled to the old one. As I'm paying for the new post, I should at least be allowed to take the old one away, said Mr. William Joseph Mitten of St. Clair Drive, Worcester Park. Judge Gordon Clark said, you cannot acquire telegraph poles simply by knocking them down.
You have to acquire them by knocking them off. The only comfort for convicted motorists is that even the police aren't immune from prosecution. From the News Chronicle.
Police Constable Roy Rushmore, booked by a fellow policeman for parking, told Ipswich magistrates yesterday, I had to attend this court as a witness. I knew that 20 minutes is the parking limit, except with special permission from a uniformed policeman. I was in uniform, and there was no other policeman about, so I gave myself permission.
Traffic offences become immeasurably more serious when the drivers involved have been drinking. Report from the Daily Express.
The other motorist involved declared that Mr. Hart smelled of drink. So did a policeman.
The trouble with cars is that the faster they get, the more dangerous life becomes for everyone. An observation from Lord Dewar.
There are two classes of pedestrians in these days of reckless motor traffic. The quick and the dead.
Here's another from Colin McInnes.
Car owners of the world unite. You've nothing to lose but your manners and someone else's life.
Sometimes injuries from motor cars aren't fatal, but they still cause terrible concern among the friends of the victim. Here's a report from an American newspaper.
It is with real regret that we learn of Mr. Wayne's recovery from an automobile accident.
What a relief it is to us all to know that there are official bodies dedicated to the prevention of accidents. A report from The Guardian.
Unston Parish Council is seeking the help of Mr. Tom Swain, MP, in an attempt to get reversed the decision of the Ministry of Transport that a 100% lighting grant cannot be made for the council stretch of the A61 unless there is a considerable increase in the number of serious accidents.
There's a lot of that about in council. One way of keeping down the number of injuries caused by cars is, of course, to keep cars off the road. Planners have already worked this one out, according to the Daily Telegraph.
A maze to muddle motorists is the basis of a plan drawn up by Westminster City Council to create in Pimlico an environmental area with traffic kept to a minimum. It is hoped that through motorists will be so perplexed they will not enter the area again.
Perhaps, ultimately, the only solution to the danger of cars is education, ensuring that no one is allowed on the road until he or she has had an exhaustive course of driving lessons.
How do you do? You're Mrs. Webb, is that right? Oh, I see you've had one lesson already. Who is the instructor on that, Mrs. Webb? Mr. Adams. I'm sorry, here it is, Mr. Adams. Just let me read ahead and kind of familiarize myself with the case. How fast were you going when Mr. Adams jumped from the car? 75? And where was that? In your driveway. How far had Mr. Adams gotten in the lesson? Backing out. I see you were backing out at 75, and that's when he jumped. Did he cover starting the car and the other way of stopping? What's the other way of stopping? Throwing it in reverse. That's right. Oh, that would do it. You're right. That would do it. All right. You want to start the car? Mrs. Webb, you just turned on the lights. You want to start the car? They all look alike, don't they? I don't know why they design them that way. All right, let's pull out into traffic. Now, what's the first thing we're going to do before we pull out into traffic? Well, what did Mr. Adams do before he let you pull out into traffic? Well, I mean, besides praying, let's say. No, what I had in mind was checking the rearview mirror. You see, we always want to check the rear... Don't pull out! please don't cry. I'm sorry. But there was this bus, Miss Webb. All right, the lane is clear now. You want to pull out? Oh, no, that wasn't bad at all. You might try it a little slower next time. All right, let's get up a bit more speed. And gradually ease it into second. Well, I didn't want to cover reverse this early, but as long as you've shifted into it, of course you're nervous. I'm nervous. I'm not just saying that. I'm really very nervous. Well, just don't pay any attention to their honking. You're doing fine. You're not blocking anyone's lane. No, as long as you're here on the safety island, you're not blocking anyone's lane. All right, you want to start the car? While you're turning the lights off, why don't you turn off the heater? All right, there we are. Let's get up a bit of speed. That's the way. Now, let's practice some turns. The important thing on turns is not to make them too sharp. Just kind of make a gradual... Oh, now that was fine. That was a wonderful turn. It's hard for me to believe you only had two lessons after you make a turn like that. Are you sure you haven't had more now? Well, I find that very difficult to believe. One little thing. This is a one-way street. Well, no, actually, it was partially my fault, you see, but you were in the left-hand lane, and you were signaling left, and I just more or less assumed you were going to turn left. same to you, fella.
Bob Newhart, of course, and who better to bring to a conclusion our piece on the humour of the motor car? Just a couple of more thoughts to close. For those of mechanical bent, evidence from a defendant in a court in Malling, Kent, quoted in the Evening Standard.
When I tightened the wheel nuts before, I tightened them too tight, so when I went to tighten them again, I thought if I didn't tighten them so tight, they wouldn't be too tight, but I must have tightened them too loose.
And next, a tragic headline from a New Jersey paper.
Newark man gets broken nose in rear-end crash.
What do you mean?
Get over. Do you want all the mic or something? What's the matter with you? Yeah.
Frank Muir goes into The Motor Car, produced by Simon Brett.